ready? Welcome back, everyone, to a new episode of Red Flags, Green Flags, Modern Psychology for Everyday Drama. In this season, we are talking about work relationships, specifically focusing on red and green flags at work. We spend about two-thirds of our lives at work, and so building strong and positive relationships at work is critical if we want to have a successful career. It's not just about what you know, but it's also who you know and how you engage with others that leads to better work outcomes. The aim of this season is to help listeners better understand the drama that happens at work and to provide deep insights to why people behave the way they do. Also, we will discuss different strategies on how to deal with workplace drama, from working with difficult colleagues and managers to how to survive in a toxic work environment. By using a psychological lens to interpret real-life experiences at work, we can gain better insights on how best to navigate the complexity of modern work and organizational life. Now, it is often said that we get attracted to companies for what they stand for and the reputation they have, but that we also often leave a company due to bad relationship with a manager. Your relationship with your manager is crucial to your success in the organization and also to your career. Good managers help you grow, succeed, and even flourish. Competent and confident managers often look for people who are better and smarter than themselves because they enjoy seeing others grow and succeed. Bad managers, on the other hand, are often fearful of the abilities of high-performing employees, scared that their job will be on the line if outperformed. Other examples of bad management are people who micromanage their employees or take credit for work done by others. The way your manager treats you can impact you in so many different ways, and a bad manager can significantly hold back your career progression and even negatively affect your mental health. And so joining me on my podcast today to talk about how to deal with difficult managers is Candida Pinto, a legal professional with over 20 years of work experience in the legal industry. Candida, welcome to the podcast here in Dubai. It is an absolute pleasure to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you for being here. So maybe you can tell us a little bit more about what you do and how long you've been here in Dubai.
I'm Candida Pinto. I'm a solicitor, qualified in England and Wales. And I moved to Dubai in September 2013. So it will be 10 years on the 29th of September that I first arrived in Dubai. I've been an in-house legal counsel for companies in the oil and gas sector. And in December 2020, I moved to a law firm, which is not a traditional law firm. It's a bit of a disruptor in the legal profession, where we worked from anywhere we were. We did not have an office, and we were like sort of independent lawyers. And in April 2023, I moved back in-house as head of the legal department for a company in the oil and gas sector still.
Good. Seems like you've had a very fruitful career in the legal industry. Do you find that, for example, now in Dubai, working also for such a long time in the legal industry, that it's very different than in other areas around the world that you've worked?
Yes, and I think there are, whether it is you are an in-house legal counsel or whether you work for a law firm, there are other complexities that you have to take into account in the work environment, such as cultural differences, which often can be misinterpreted, as somebody perhaps behaving in a manner that is not agreeable with you, because you come from, well, I lived most of my life in the UK. I am Portuguese by birth. So I understand two different cultures, but now here in Dubai, I need to understand a variety of other cultures because this is a very diverse community.
And there's a lot of people here.
A lot of people here. Yeah. So management skills and takes a whole other dimension, because you have to factor into it the cultural differences.
Yeah, and everyone has a different approach. If you come from India,
absolutely,
Middle East, or Europe,
absolutely,
different perspectives,
absolutely,
of what management is, authority.
Absolutely.
Yeah, yeah.
And the relationships between the manager and the people senior to the manager, yeah, within the organization, which the manner in which the manager may behave or manages its direct reports, and in my experience, is highly influenced by the culture that the manager comes from.
Great, great. And then absolutely. And I think in today's podcast, when we're going to talk about bad management and what causes bad management, or even good management, for that matter of fact, mm-hmm, I think culture, as you mentioned, plays a huge role in that, and also how we interpret certain behaviors and of what's right,
correct,
and what's not right. Before we actually jump into the nuts and bolts about red flags and bad management, I would like to ask you, how would you rate your own management skills from 0 to 10, if you could give yourself a number, and why?
Right. I would say 8 to 9. And the reason I say that is actually, in your introduction, you mentioned all the things that I believe in as a manager, and how managing people should look like. And one of the things is that I believe in raising everybody around me, whoever they are. I share knowledge. I'm very open about sharing knowledge and helping other people grow. Because I've always believed that if you have a happy team working with you, that they feel happy to be with you, they listen to you, they feel heard, they feel valued. Even if they have more experience than you, or they know more than you, you rise. As they rise, you also rise, because your team is going to make you look good. So if you support your team and if you give them the tools to thrive and to develop as lawyers or, you know, whoever, whatever the job may be, then you're going to look good.
Amazing. So for you, seeing other people grow and develop is something that you also enjoy doing then?
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I think that's a really good hallmark of a good manager, right? Mm-hmm. Especially when you manage people, it's not about yourself, it's about what you do for other people.
Yes, and at the end of the day, particularly when you are an in-house, you're working for the enterprise. Okay, if you're in a law firm and you are a partner, you're kind of working for yourself, so it's a slightly, the dynamics are very different. But you are working for the enterprise. And if the enterprise is doing well, making money and profit, then you have a job, you get paid, you may get a pay rise or bonuses or whatever. So it's for the benefit of the collective rather than the benefit of the individual.
Yeah. But I can also imagine at the same time, working for a law firm, it seems to me like a high-pressured environment, right? It's the pressure's always on, you have to deliver. And you know, I guess this, the tasks that you actually engage with are not very light things. I mean, law is law. How do you interpret mm-hmm. it? You've got to deal with conflict. Explain how you as a manager then help your people, other lawyers in that mm-hmm. matter, to work effectively together and to deal really well with pressure.
My experience in a traditional law firm is limited, but you know, having had some experience with Argentum, you are always working against very tight deadlines, usually. Personally, I tend to, when everyone is fretting around me and getting all stressed, I tend to go really calm and then sort of instead of just talking a lot, I think first. I look
before,
at the, before responding, and I think look at the facts. And there has been I'm thinking of sort of situations where I have been where managers are making emotional decisions, and then I have to go back and look at the facts and then say, you know, yes, I understand where you're coming from, it's very irritating and all of that, but let's look at this from this perspective as well, because it might be more beneficial to look at things this way.
So. Yeah, you do come across as someone who is very reflective, who is very thoughtful. Mm-hmm. But I can also imagine that a lot of managers working in a similar environment might have a very different personality. Could mm-hmm. you give some examples of, you know, other management styles that you've seen based on different personality traits, or maybe how people behave, that you either considered either positive or maybe even negative, for that matter of fact?
Well, I can only speak for past managers that I had and the experiences that I went through. And two jobs that I had in the past, I left because of the manager. One of them, when I was in the UK, if it wasn't for the manager, I would probably still be with a company today. But I actually thank him, because that gave me the opportunity to come to Dubai, and my experience here in Dubai has been very rich.
So when one door closes, another one opens.
Another one opens, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, but yeah. I didn't quite see it that way at the time. I think one problem, sometimes the problem is, and it was the case with that manager that I had, is that people believe that in order to elevate themselves, they need to suppress those that are below them.
That's unfortunate.
That are below them.
Yeah.
And that creates a difficult environment, because erodes trust between the employee and the manager. And you need to have trust in order for the organization to operate effectively and efficiently.
And also for employees to also give their best in the organization.
And that sort of negative behavior is not necessarily a manager who is loud, shouts a lot, raises his voice. You
say his voice?
His voice, yeah. In this case, it was a he, yes. Yeah. I think in both cases was a he. But is the way sometimes things are done, which are clearly designed either to undermine you or to distance you, to make you feel like devalued, well. The behavior can take, I've experienced also somebody that threatened to hit me, but
that's terrible.
So, it can be a variety of behaviors
that can manifest. Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
But it's not necessarily a loud and an aggressive one.
No, it's interesting. We can talk about that. I think, you know, some elements of people's bad behaviors can be linked to maybe sometimes incompetencies, but it can also often be related to either personality style or insecurities that people might have in the workplace. And especially with managers that, I don't want to say just incompetent, but sometimes those insecurities that managers bring into the workplace, you know, really makes them do things that are not really productive or not very helpful to other people. Mm-hmm. And you gave this example of wanting to suppress other people just for themselves to look better. And I often see that a lot also in organizations when I assess, you know, behaviors and productivity and well-being of employees in organizations. And I often say that A players choose A players, but B players choose C players. Mm-hmm. And that's so clear in an organization, because you see that the B players, who are very fearful of, you know, other people showing up and them potentially looking bad, that they will tend to hire people that are, you know, which they believe are significantly low in terms of performance, personality, and behaviors, get rid of the people that they see as a threat potentially.
Correct.
Yeah. Yes. And then also the people that they have in place, they often will also mistreat them as a way to kind of make themselves feel mm-hmm. better. And unfortunately that happens a lot in organizations.
Yes. Yeah. And in my case, it was that the manager came into the organization, and I knew that that was going to happen. I knew that there were reasons why he would come in and as sort of the head of the legal department, and I was perfectly happy with that. And when he joined, I took him around, introduced him to everybody and all of that. But I had, at that time, I already had 8 years of service with a company. So I had well-established relationships, both within the organization as well as external players, clients and vendors, because part of my job included.
So you were saying that regardless of what happened to you, thanks to those personal relationships that you had built up, you had some kind of buffer or protection?
Well, I had a strong position within the organization because I was regarded as sort of a trusted
employee
somebody that managers and other people within the organization would come to me for advice and support. And I've always operated an open door policy, and whatever question I am asked, even if it is not a legal question, I never say it is not my job, because I always respond to the question, even if it is to say, I think this and that, but it might be best that you double check with someone else because they may know slightly better, but you know, I can sort of direct you in the right position.
So that was more of a, let's say you were saying that would be more of a way of maintaining yourself in the organization, of having a good reputation, a strong network as a way of feeling protected from bad management. How does this relate?
Well, this relates that with the manager when he came in, because I already had that sort of reputation within the organization. I think he felt threatened.
Ah, okay, got it.
Threatened by that strong reputation that I had within the organization, and felt overshadowed perhaps by me. So I took steps to kind of the end result, it was to sort of demote me and to distance me from having direct contact with the managers, so that he could be in between the managers and myself. So,
yeah, that's a very...
In order to elevate himself and to feel that he was the one that had the power and the authority within the organization and not me.
Yeah, it's very unfortunate that happens, because, you know, one major red flag, and you know, with managers with ill intent, is when they see that you might be a high performer or very well connected, that they know that if something goes wrong, you always have access to other people, other decision makers in the mm-hmm. organization that you can speak to. And so one specific behavior that comes up a lot is that when that fear is there, that sometimes managers can try to isolate you
Correct.
From the rest of the organization.
Correct.
And so that way they can ensure that nobody sees you, even though you have a very strong reputation, that they'll see you less. They might be able to talk bad about you because of that, and then you would not have access to people, or not just your
Correct.
Network, but also information sometimes.
Correct. Absolutely. And this particular manager is an example of all of that, because soon after he joined the company, I went on secondment to a law firm. This was an arrangement between the company and the law firm, and that I was going to be seconded to them for 8 months, and a lawyer from the law firm would come and uncover for me in the office. And it was part of my agreement with the company that whilst on secondment, I would still support the company during those 8 months that I was going to be out. And soon before I left to go on secondment, I was prohibited from communicating with anyone in the company during those 8 months.
Wow.
And
what was the reason behind that?
No reason. I wasn't given a reason. So because I had dealt with a transaction where documents were with a notary public, in the custody of a notary public, and they would only release those documents once we ordered them to do so and to take the next steps. It was a day or two after I left that a colleague of mine from the Norwegian office sent an email to me, copying my manager and everybody, inquiring about those documents. And I responded to that email and everyone, including my manager, just to say where the documents were. And then the next thing I knew, I was called into the office for disciplinary action. So, that was his way of
getting rid of you.
Trying to, but he obviously he wouldn't be able to for those 8 months that I was on secondment. But as soon as I returned to the company, even though my agreement was that I would remain with the company for at least a year. But I left immediately after.
Yeah, you don't want to stay there anymore after
that.
Yeah,
absolutely.
No, I wanted to throw something of a soft landing in here, saying like, how difficult, you know, bad situations can play out in law firms, because everyone knows the law in that perspective. So I could not imagine how that would play out in that sense. Like, everyone knows the law, so if bad things happen, you know exactly what to do. I don't know, is that a case? Just for the layman's perspective here. But
well, from my limited experience with law firms, and this is a comment that I have made in the past, that it always surprises me that behaviors like this, they still take place in law firms, even though you would have thought that lawyers know best.
Right.
But unfortunately, they're not immune to that kind of bad behavior.
No one is. So looking back in your, thank you for sharing that, first of all. And so, Candida, looking back in your overall, you know, career, and what would you then kind of describe? What would be some examples of really bad bosses in terms of behavior? But what are also kind of other examples? You've given your own today, but what would you also give some examples of good behaviors?
Good behaviors.
Or exemplary behaviors of a good boss?
That's a difficult one, actually.
The good ones or the bad ones?
The good ones. It's funny that you remember more the bad ones than you do, the good ones.
So maybe we could just focus on the bad ones.
Yeah. I have colleagues that, there were colleagues of mine, actually lawyers as well, because the company was a multinational and we had lawyers in the UK, in Oslo, in Houston. And a colleague of mine from the Houston office that was actually a very good support. And I often spoke to him about the goings-on in the office.
Right. So you're saying support provided by a manager is an example of a good behavior?
Yes.
Okay,
yes,
okay.
Yes.
Well, any other examples that you can come up with that you can think of?
Now you put me on the spot.
Maybe I can share one that I think is really important. And it comes back to what you said before, managers that elevate you, right? Managers that give you wings and the resources and the support. And elevation doesn't always have to mean like, oh, here's all the resources that you need to have. Sometimes it is a manager that gives you a challenging opportunity to work on so that you can grow and flourish and learn, and then he or she being that support mechanism for you as you go through that new experience.
Correct. And I'm also thinking of my current job, and I report directly to the president of the company. And I do feel that I have his back. That kind of behavior can be reflected very subtly.
Yeah.
And even if it is to communicate to other members and to other managers in the company that, for example, they need to come to me about certain matters and to discuss them with me before they take any action, that kind of thing. So it doesn't have to be giving you a big job with great responsibility, but acknowledging that you are in the role that you are and right. you are a valued member of the team and you are competent and that you have a role to play.
Right.
So all of that is positive behavior,
right.
which gives you a sense of worth and security as well, and you don't feel like I'm going to be thrown under the bus in any minute now.
Right. So yeah, and I like how you said that. It's not just only the things that they do for you, but how they make you feel and
correct.
Yeah, like giving you autonomy, giving you the opportunity to speak and make decisions. Not only make you feel supported, but recognizing you as well for your accomplishments. I mean, it's almost like any kind of relationship, anywhere where someone supports you and helps you to be able to do your job and also has your back when you have to take sometimes you have to make difficult decisions or sometimes you have to take risks. And, sometimes there are no procedures for the things that you need to do. And does not just maybe the environment, but does that manager make you feel that you can speak up? I think that's a really nice thing that you mentioned. I've got a really interesting question for you. And this is also, I'll share with you first, because I also asked my audience and followers on Instagram about them sharing also some experiences with us. And I'd love to get your perspective on this, and then I'll follow up with a question. So this comment actually came from a lady called Niharika, based out of India. And she is a high-performing software engineer who says that when a new female tech lead joined the company, she made her life a hell. The tech lead didn't like her from the beginning at all, and just found ways to make her look bad publicly, but also secretively as well. So spoke bad about her behind her back. And her own manager, who was also a female, wasn't supportive either to her, even though she knew her longer than she knew the new tech lead, and would also take sides of that new lady that joined the company at times. Awesome. Niharika says that she refused to react to these bad behaviors and engage in it. Just put my head down, just let me do my job and I'll just move on with it. But over a period of 2 years, it significantly impacted her mental health, but also stopped her from advancing in the company. What's your take on this?
Yes.
Recognize.
I recognize all of that. I've never had female managers. My managers have always been male. But I've had female colleagues, so my experience with female colleagues has been generally positive. But with managers, I recognize all of that, and
which you've observed from people around you, or
and also from what I experienced myself, and how bad managers by. What she mentioned, which is kind of similar to what happened to me in the job that I had before I joined Argentum. And that was a meeting was going to occur, and I was meant to be attending that meeting, but I wasn't told about the meeting. And this was a time when weekend was Friday and Saturday. When on a Thursday afternoon...
Oh, so that was in Dubai then?
That was in Dubai.
Okay, got it.
On a Thursday afternoon, I went to see my manager and asked if I could take half Sunday afternoon off because I was going to a lunch on Sunday afternoon. And then I was told there was going to be a meeting on Sunday with the with the CFO that was coming from Houston.
Just for the listeners out there, that time Sunday was the Monday.
Yeah, correct.
In the Arab world.
Correct.
Yeah, and the UAE has changed correct. That now, yeah. Just yes. So that everyone understands
correct.
The context.
And I said, what's the meeting about? I don't know. What time is the meeting? I don't know. Then Sunday morning, I was in the office, and the finance director came by my office and said, your manager said you were not going to be in today. And I said, no, this is the conversation that I had on Thursday afternoon. What time is the meeting? 1:30. I said, right, I'll cancel lunch.
And you went to the meeting?
So I cancelled lunch and I went to the meeting.
Fantastic.
When eventually he had to call me for the meeting, so I arrive at the meeting and I see that on the table there were some slides printed and stapled together, and I picked up a set of slides. And that was all about the work that we do. And at the time, I was looking after the Asia-Pacific region.
So he was taking credit for your work?
Well, I don't know whether it was... I don't know what was his thinking, but...
That's then a very legal answer, by the way.
I looked... I looked at the slides, and then he said, I'll talk about Middle East and Africa, and Candida will talk about Asia-Pacific. Mm. And I thought, thanks, because now I'm totally unprepared for this meeting and I have to think on my feet.
Did it turn out well for you?
So for me, it turned out well, because yeah. then the CFO wanted to know about me. And so I told him a bit of my trajectory, and basically most of my jobs that I've had, it was because I was persuaded to join those companies rather than actually me going looking for or even applying for those jobs. So I had been headhunted twice before. So for me, it went well. But that is a good example of the kind of behavior that can cause an enormous amount of stress and anxiety.
For sure.
Because that example isn't the only one. There were various others. That had a severe impact on my mental health. So I was with that company for 4 years, and before I left, I went to therapy. So that's
yeah.
So I totally resonate with that kind of behavior,
yeah.
And how it can have a negative impact, because then you don't know where you stand.
Right.
And the thing is, we all have, and speaking for myself, that I know that I've always known that I have my own emotional baggage that I carry with me.
We all do.
We all do. Yeah. So managers also have their own baggage. But I think, and now having done therapy, and which I continue to do, and I listen to lots of other podcasts, including yours. And now I have the tools that if I was faced with that similar scenario, I would probably handle it very differently. But at the time, I did not have the tools to deal with it.
Right.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Thanks. Let's say thanks to the digital age, I think also... more and more of these stories are being shared and more information is available than ever before. And, you know, often people say, well, why didn't we know about this before? And I think, well, honestly, of course, I think we did experience it. We didn't know about mm-hmm. it. But what's also very interesting, and we talked about this just briefly before we started the show, when I was having people to come in and join this series to talk about, you know, work relationships, I thought... it would be such an easy topic to talk about and everyone would love to join. But apparently people are more willing to come in and talk about the devastation of toxic relationships and love than they are to talk about work relationships. And that fascinated me, because it shows that, and this is one of the reasons why I wanted to have this topic for this series on the podcast, is because I think we know about it, but we don't talk about it. And it's, you know, also when we talk about office politics or organizational politics, we all know it exists. But there doesn't seem to be any more information about how to deal with it. Business schools don't even teach you about office politics, generally speaking. And so what's really interesting is that now with more information coming out there, we're starting to listen, we're starting to learn more and starting to identify when certain behaviors are not good and what can we do about it. And that's why I think these stories and also the stories that you're sharing today are so important to the listeners. And I think there's so many people out there right now listening to your personal experience and thinking, damn it, I'm going through that right now. Or, you know, I went through that a couple of months ago or last year. And what you've also mentioned is that, and this is just the unfortunate truth of spending 2/3 of our life at work, is that if things don't go well at work, it has a huge impact on us.
Massive.
Yeah.
Massive. I have never experienced the levels of stress and anxiety. I had panic attacks, essentially something that I have never experienced before. But as I said, I did not have the tools.
Right.
So the work that I've been doing on myself, which I thoroughly recommend that everyone should go and do it. Just, you know, you cannot change anybody. You can only change yourself. You can only arm yourself with the tools to deal with those kind of issues.
Yeah.
And that is for the benefit of your own mental health.
Yeah. Absolutely.
And it will help you navigate the office politics. Because I was talking to a friend of mine from university that moved to Dubai at the beginning of April as the managing director for a pharmaceutical company. He was talking to me about the finance directors sort of reaction to a particular situation. And he was saying to her, look, don't worry about it, don't panic, because this is not about you, it's about the company. Okay, so don't take it personally.
Yeah.
And the thing is, we sometimes think that whatever is going on in the office is about us, is somebody trying to get to us, somebody, you know, in these examples that I gave about experiences that I have been through, yes, it was related to me. But I don't think the thinking of the manager is not, I want to really make her life really, really difficult.
Right.
I think their perspective is, I'm going to do this because that is going to elevate me. So it's not about, it's usually, you know, we don't factor into the equation.
Right.
It's just their way of doing things so that elevates them with total disregard how that impacts on others.
True. And I'm happy you said that, because there's so many factors that you can impact someone to behave in a bad way. And, you know, we often also want to, and I mean, most of the times when a bad manager continuously mistreats people, then definitely there's something of character there. But also we should not forget about the environment, because, you know, environments can also have a huge impact on people's behaviors. And so if toxic environments allow for that behavior to happen, or almost promote it in that sense, then of course that kind of behavior, even if you're not of, let's say, quote unquote, a bad manager or someone who can, you know, someone who shows a lot of toxic behaviors in the workplace, it can actually make you that way, right? So your environment has a huge impact also on how you behave and how you treat others, especially because you observe how other people are being treated in the organization. Look, and I haven't shared much from my experiences, but I've gone through my fair share of you know, office politics, and I consider myself someone who's fairly resilient in that perspective. And because sometimes you are very resilient, you take on more than you should. And then there comes a point in your life that you sit down and think about, holy crap, I've actually taken on so much crap, actually, from certain people around me, or I've allowed certain behaviors to happen. And you don't do anything about it. And then I think that my key takeaway from this is that watch out, because it can, like you said, it can really hurt you in the long run. And the moment that you address it, that can also be extremely challenging in itself. But I think it's so important because you stand for what you believe in. You stand for your values. Mm-hmm. And I think that's equally as important as, you know, identifying it and knowing how to, I mean, not only kind of identifying, but addressing it. Because mm-hmm. addressing it, even though you can't solve the issue, because then sometimes you have to leave and sometimes you can resolve mm-hmm. the conflict. But, you know, I think addressing it, if a lot of people walk away thinking, look, I can't do anything about it. It's mm-hmm. a kind of this helplessness. You know, I'm just going to be stung if I do. My managers are not going to protect me. This environment is not going to protect me. And even then I would say, don't just stand there and be the helpless dog sitting in mm-hmm. the corner. You know, stand up, say something about it, because that's saying something about it. Even though you can't address your manager, you can go to someone in HR or maybe speak to someone else, mm-hmm. a confidant or whoever, that can then give you that perspective of realization, because you might be so tunnel visioned into your work and your day-to-day stuff that you lose track of what's real. And if you continuously are affected by, you know, different negative behaviors and toxic environments, then you lose track of that. And I think that's why it's also really important to verbalize it and address it, because that's equally healing mm-hmm. in a sense, because it does give you that sense of reality.
I couldn't agree more. And in fact, something that you read about earlier, that the lady that said, you know, for 2 years I just put my head down and carry on working, all of that. I think that what that does, that doesn't yeah. resolve the issue, neither for you nor for the other people. Mm. And what I have found is that if you actually stand up for yourself and if you speak out, it resolves the issue, because other people are behaving. Some people, they push the boundaries. It's like children. They always testing to see how far you can go. It's the same with bullies, you know. Yeah. They keep pushing the boundaries to see how far they can go. And if you stand up for yourself, then it actually changes behavior.
Yeah.
And I have a good example, actually, of... This was actually a client who sent an email negatively criticizing some work that I had done. The lawyer that was responsible for that client sent an email like, yes, you know, it's all my fault. I should have sent, I should have done. And then I said, I would like to respond to that email. So I responded to the email and I demonstrated with the facts and the law that I was correct. And I copied everybody on that email.
Touché.
nobody replied to that email.
Yeah.
The person I addressed it to did not reply to that email. And now I am the lawyer of choice, a go-to person, and I am loved within their organization. And to me, that just demonstrates that if you stand up for yourself, believe that you are worthy, that you are valuable, and you know, you stand up for yourself.
Yeah,
you know, respect yourself above all others. Because
I love that example.
You can only, and I use that example yeah. in conversations that I've had with other lawyers. It's like, you know, this is what happened, and it is because, you know, it is because I stood up for myself and yeah. I demonstrated
yeah.
that you earn the respect of other people. So,
yeah. But you can also yeah. imagine that can be very difficult for people listening now, you know, not feeling as confident, that would be hard to do. So what would you recommend to people that don't feel as confident? What could they do specifically, and how could they address like being either attacked or bullied? Or, I mean, this is a big topic in a sense, but what would you recommend to people that, you know, now who are now listening, that don't feel that confident to speak up against someone in authority and a manager or?
Well, you know, because we all have our own baggage, as I was about to say earlier, We often react to things rather than respond to things. My recommendation is, even if you're writing an email reply, save it in the drafts.
Document it.
Slip on it.
Yeah.
Read it in the morning and then see if you still feel the same way or not. But don't rush at reacting to something, and recognize that you are reacting rather than responding to a particular situation. And also talk to someone within the organization or outside of the organization, but someone that you can talk to. Don't feel that you are alone because you are not. We all have, I have my own insecurities and I know where they come from. And because of the work that I've done, for example, I can recognize when I'm being triggered by a work environment. So, and those triggers are not as strong as they once were. So talk to someone.
Talking is really important.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And maybe what also you could say is that when you don't know who to talk to, then maybe a good idea is to go and to speak to people that you do know and ask them maybe who to speak to. And maybe that is also a good advice, because not everyone always has access to everyone. Kind of brings back to validating your own standpoint. Is this real, what I'm experiencing right now? Because sometimes, being put into a very weird situation or either abusive situation or a toxic situation, and if you've never had that experience before, your fight or flight kind of kicks in, right? And
correct.
So a lot of people do freeze. And that's unfortunate. And I think that's why if they're listening to this right now, it kind of gives them those kind of tools of what to do, right? Speak to someone, speak to an HR manager, document things. I think that's really, really good. I think that's really good advice.
Even if it is just a way of you releasing that sort of stress.
Getting it out of your system.
Getting it out of your system.
Yeah.
Consider finding a counselor, psychologist, therapy, whatever.
We're coming to a closure of this podcast. Time flies, doesn't it?
Indeed.
I had so many more questions. I wanted to talk to you about.
I could talk.
Micromanagement. I wanted to talk about managers that don't stick to promises. But I think we have to have a continuing discussion on this one. So just to wrap up, because this course is called Red Flags, Green Flags. And we did talk a little bit about good behaviors and bad behaviors, but let's just quickly wrap up. What would be for you the two biggest red flags in management and two green flags in management?
Right. Red flags would be, as I've mentioned before, when you see that you're not given all the information that you need, for example, when your manager asks you to do something but doesn't give you clear instructions, for example.
And withholds information.
Withholds information. Because knowledge is power, and I need to keep all the information for myself so that I can elevate myself. So that would be one. You wanted two, right?
Yeah, one more.
I can't think of another one, to be honest. But a green, let me talk about a green flag. And the green flag for me would be someone that, if you ask a question, for example, it gives you a full answer and is clear. If it doesn't know, I don't know, but you can go to this other place and find it there. Someone that is really not trying to hold you back, then that would be a green flag for me, and someone that is demonstrating good management skills.
Amazing. Perfect. Thank you so much for being here today, Candida, and sharing your experiences. I was listening to you about your personal stories, and you also telling me at the same time about your therapy and your own development. Did this in any way, this conversation, speaking to so many people, sharing your story now, knowing that thousands of people are going to listen to this, is this in any way therapeutic to you?
It is. And recently I've been listening to podcasts about you know, what people, journeys that people go through in their lives. And I found that very helpful for myself. So I hope that sharing my experiences that will help other people and will resonate with other people and will help them to either understand better what is going on in their work environment, or even if it is just to go and seek help, because everyone is valued, everyone has worth, and they should value themselves.
Fantastic. Candida, thanks again for being on the show, and look forward to meeting up with you again.
Thank you very much for having me. It's a pleasure.
And so for everyone listening right now, so thank you for listening in today. And I look forward to having you back in my next episodes, where we're going to be talking much more about red flags and green flags at work, about bad management, and of course, about toxic relationships and backstabbing colleagues. That happens a lot. But more importantly, how can we deal effectively with difficult situations at work? Because it's so important to our lives and our well-being. So much more to come, and look forward to speaking to you then, and also having you back on our show. Oh, and last thing that I want to mention, if you're not following me yet on social media, please do. My handle is Modern Day Psychologist on both TikTok and on Instagram. And of course, I will be sharing Candida's info if you'd like to be in contact with her through our socials as well.
Pleasure. Thank you very much for having me.
I look forward to
seeing you again.
Fantastic. Are you ready?